I'm willing to bet there are many of you who are very surprised to see me in the pulpit today. Truth be told, I'm a little shocked myself. But in all honesty, I'm here today to tell you my story. It's one that has taken me years to figure out, and it's still unraveling. It has been a multitude of aha moments, oh crap moments, and no kidding moments, and perhaps a few expletives along the way. I'll spare you those. I am an empath, a silent observer, the wholehearted listener, the person who goes that little bit extra to make someone else's day, a person free of judgment, except for my own flaws, a person who feels and loves and understands and gets it when a friend or family member is going through a rough time. We all may have one or some of these qualities in ourselves, but in the empath, it goes a lot deeper in the soul. We feel so much more than the average person. It can almost be described as a superpower, though not one often thought of. In her book, The Empath Survival Guide, Dr. Judith Orloff explains the differences between ordinary empathy and being an empath. She writes, and I quote, "Ordinary empathy means our heart goes out to another person when they are going through a difficult time. It also means that we can be happy for others during their times of joy. As an empath, however, we actually sense other people's emotions, their energy, and physical symptoms in our bodies, without the usual filters that most people have. We can experience other people's sorrow and also their joy. We are super sensitive to their tone of voice and body language. We can hear what they don't say in words, but communicate non-verbally and through silence. Empaths feel things first, then think, which is the opposite of how most people function in our society." End quote. Just like any superpower or gift, it does have its character flaws. Like many people, I have ADHD. Growing up, I wasn't the loud child or the one who couldn't sit still in the classroom. I was quiet because I was always listening. I listened to the teachers, but I also picked up on other sounds. The clock ticking, the fan humming, the fly on the window buzzing. I was evaluated for being inattentive. However, the psychiatrist didn't think I required medication, so I went along without it. I was not into sports like most kids were. I made up my own imaginary games, I rode imaginary horses, and I built many indoor and outdoor forts. I was a daydreamer, a bit of a wallflower, and I loved to draw. But because of this uniqueness as a child, I was also the subject of harassment from other kids. I was always the last one picked for gym class, always the odd one out. I was always nice to the other kids, but I couldn't understand why I was always getting picked on. In those days, bullying wasn't a big topic like it is today. Teachers expected the buck up and get over it approach. And this was in the early 1990s. I'm so glad times have changed. Kids like me never deserve that kind of rudeness and harm that bullying can do, from kids and adults alike. The problem with the buck up and get over it approach was that because of my abilities as an empath, though I didn't know it at the time, was that I took all of those sad and angry emotions and kept them inside. I didn't tell the teachers what had happened, unless it was something truly awful. And I let that stress evolve into a bigger and more destructive ball of wax. There were times it would get so painful inside that on a few occasions I would lash out. At times that didn't seem like things were that big of a deal. I was getting that anger out by yelling or shouting, but it was because I had just had enough. The straw that broke the camel's back, yep, that's what happened. And at the unfortunate expense of whomever I happened to do this to. Sorry, Mom and Dad. They had wondered why my grades were only so-so, why my behavior was so quiet, and why I procrastinated almost all my homework assignments and projects, why I didn't want to go to school that day. All of these emotions that, partly due to teenage hormones and turning into a young adult, what did they all mean? Why, in some respects, was I more like an adult than a kid my age at the time? It took many years after that to figure out what all this meant. Let me go to the beginning. When I was in kindergarten, I had a teacher who had the morals and thought processes of someone extremely old-fashioned. She was not the warm and fuzzy type. I can assume that many of you probably had similar teachers when you were young. For a young developing child, especially one like me, this was a very strange and tough first year of part-time school. This particular teacher was very strict. She did not physically harm any of us. We were lucky that the abusive stages of teachers at the time were being more closely monitored. But the emotional baggage that I still see in myself today is relevant. One thing that I have learned recently is that I have a condition called RSD, or rejection sensitive dysphoria. This condition makes a person with either ADHD, ADD, and/or with other types of mental illness suffer from an extreme case of rejection from things that a common person may just shrug off. Things like learning from one's mistakes, taking constructive criticism on a positive note, or being picked on in a way that may seem jokingly. We take it in. And just as I described earlier about what happens when we take it all in, that ball of wax gets bigger and bigger. This kindergarten teacher would not allow us to fix our mistakes. She would put our corrected materials in front of us, with lots of red pen usage, mind you, have us go through the project again, but not let us correct it. To me, it was a way of bringing about even more shame to our mistakes. For a young, sensitive mind like mine at the time, it was awful. I was being shamed for my sensitivity rather than being supported. The first reading today describes in many ways how I felt as a kid being the odd one out. How may I have been labeled as overly sensitive? So where does compassion and empathy come together? Science does play a role in the empath ability. Some more interesting information from Dr. Orloff's book, and I quote, "The mirror neuron system is a specialized group of brain cells responsible for compassion. These cells enable everyone to mirror emotions, to share another person's pain, fear, or joy. Because empaths are thought to have hypersensitive mirror neurons, we deeply resonate with other people's feelings. Mirror neurons are triggered by outside events. As an example, when we see someone get hurt, we feel hurt too. When we see a child cry, we feel sad too." I myself didn't recognize this ability until recently in life. I know that I showed these kinds of sensitivities, but never truly explored what they really meant. It wasn't until I came across a specific group page on Facebook for adults with ADHD or ADD, or combined, as well as other behavioral health issues, that I started to figure this all out. Please note that this wasn't an episode of looking up something on Dr. Google. These are real people dealing with real-life situations. They were telling their stories, their problems, and reaching out on this group page to others who may or may not have similar things going on. When I first came to this page, I was a little skeptical about sharing too much about myself. I still am, and I do use caution whenever I do post anything. But the things I have shared with them have given me many aha moments, as well as feeling better about the things I do feel as a person with ADHD, but also RSD and being an empath. I have become connected in an online fashion, as it were, to a community of people who struggle with very similar issues as I do. I can't tell you what a relief it was to figure this out. Granted, not everyone is an empath. Some of these people have serious medical conditions which require heavy medication. My heart reaches out to them, and even if I don't post anything under what they write down, I still feel for them. Heart reaching out. That is the main ability I see myself doing most of the time as an empath. The sharing time during joys and concerns this morning is a good example of how I feel when I hear your words each time you share something. I feel like I'm that silly heart pillow reaching out and invisibly giving you a hug. If I can't do it physically, say I don't know you that well, then at least I'm able to do it quietly and mentally, sending you a good vibe that I hope you can feel. There are many different kinds of empaths and abilities. Dr. Orloff writes about three of them, which I will describe in general. Physical empaths, especially tuned in to other people's physical symptoms and tend to absorb them into their body. They can also become energized by someone else's sense of well-being. Emotional empaths mainly pick up other people's emotions and become a sponge for their feelings, both happy and sad. Intuitive empaths experience extraordinary perceptions such as heightened intuition, messages in dreams, and animal and plant communication. It's not uncommon for an empath to display one, some, or all of these abilities. It really depends on the person and how they perceive various situations. I consider myself to be a bit of all three, physical, emotional, and intuitive. While this may sound like an incredible ability, it does have its drawbacks. For one, it can be an incredible energy drain for the empath. I find that I need some quiet time for reflection, alone time, or perhaps I just really need a nap. But it does drain me in a way that people may not understand. When I hear about someone's troubles or their joys, I find myself taking it in and letting it sit, much how I used to treat anger that I mentioned before. I need the time to think it through and how to follow up with that person in a way that isn't intrusive, but also kind. Sometimes I can't do anything and I have to let it go. A good example of this happened where I work. As many of you know, I work as a food demonstrator at the local Costco warehouse. Oftentimes, I'm on the warehouse floor with some kind of food product that I offer samples to other passing by members. On this particular occasion, I was in the Costco employee lounge, serving made-to-order grilled cheese sandwiches for Costco employees. It's something they ask us to do about twice a year. It's a chance to be off the floor for the day, but also to catch up with employees who I see on a regular basis while they wait for their food to be ready. The day was going well, and a woman employee came in and talked about her problems regarding her soon-to-be ex-husband with her fellow coworkers. It wasn't like she was whispering. Everyone could hear her. I was also listening, carefully, as I made her grilled cheese sandwich. She had mentioned how her ex had stolen money from her, and she couldn't afford a week's worth of groceries for her kids, as well as gas for her car. She was nearly in tears. She then received a few hugs from her coworkers before they had to head back out to the floor. There was a bit of silence until I mentioned to her that her grilled cheese was ready. She took it, thanked me, and sat down to eat. I could see how stressed out she was just by the way she sat at the table. I was nearly compelled to go to the nearest Pick and Save after work and bring her a bag of groceries. But in the end, I didn't. She didn't know me that well, excuse me, nor I her, and I didn't know how that would have played out. Would she be weirded out? Maybe. Would she have been happy? Maybe. I played it safe by not doing anything, with the exception of giving her a supportive smile when she took her grilled cheese from me. I think she noticed that, at least. In times where I saw her after that particular day, I would ask her how she was doing, but not going into detail. And I believe just by asking that can do wonders for someone else. I attribute my listening skills from being around animals most of my life. I had a horse growing up, and I learned many things about listening just from watching him. As you may know, a horse's ears can rotate 180 degrees. They are prey animals, so good hearing is important. When I was learning to ride, my instructor often told me to focus my gaze between his ears. It helped my posture as well as where I should be looking to better guide the horse around the arena. It became a much bigger focal point for me because I loved watching the movement of his ears. Back towards me when he was listening for my commands, and forward when he focused on what was ahead of him. When I was younger, I imagined that my ears were on top of my head just like his, so I could pick up sounds like he did. I realize how goofy that might appear to many of you. But it puts into perspective a bit on why I can listen so well, as well as to isolate where certain sounds are coming from. Another thing I learned from being around horses is the flaring of their nostrils. A horse will do that when he is frightened. Ironically, humans do it too. I've noticed that it happens when we become angry or scared, our eyebrows furl and our nostrils flare. You can experiment with this in your bathroom mirror. It's not as dramatic as when a horse does it, but again, it's something I notice when I'm reading somebody's facial expressions. I am a believer that animals can teach us empathy just because they are present in our lives. Our beloved pets seem to know just when we need them. They sit quietly with us when we are sad. They don't judge us. And they give us so much love just by being with us. From those things, be present, don't judge, and listen wholeheartedly. Even if you can't think of a good response to someone who you sit with who is going through a rough spot in their lives, just being present with them is meaningful within itself. I will close with an excerpt from Winnie the Pooh and his friend Piglet. There was a pause. "Do you want to talk about it?" asked Piglet. "No," said Pooh after a bit. "No, I don't think I do." "That's okay," said Piglet. And he came and sat beside his friend. "What are you doing?" asked Pooh. "Nothing, really," said Piglet. "Only I know what difficult days are like. I quite often don't feel like talking about it on my difficult days either." "But goodness," continued Piglet, "difficult days are so much easier when you know you've got someone there for you. And I'll always be there for you, Pooh." As Pooh sat there working through his head his difficult day, while the solid, reliable little piglet sat next to him quietly, swinging his little legs, he thought that his best friend had never been more right. Amen.